Hello and a very warm welcome to Midori House, live from Studio One at Monocle 24 here in London. I'm Nancy Durham. Ahead this hour, we witness a Turkish neighborhood in transition.
To be in neighborhoods is the first, I think, important thing for making that kind of transformation successful.
And find out who wins our very own Top of the Political Pops.
I found my thrill.
That's right here over the next 60 minutes on Midori House. First, let's get the latest news from around the world with Nick Kelly.
Monocle 24 News, I'm Nick Kelly. The Eurozone won verbal support but no new money at the G20 summit today for its tortured efforts to overcome a sovereign debt crisis, while Italy was effectively placed under IMF supervision. Leaders of the world's major economies meeting on the French Riviera told Europe to sort out its own problems and deferred until next year any move to provide more crisis-fighting resources to the International Monetary Fund. The head of the IMF, Christine Lagarde, said the fund would be ready for any other crisis situation and mentioned Italy in particular.
We will be checking the implementation of the commitments that have been made by Italy under the 15 pages commitment that it has made to members of the Eurozone a couple of weeks ago. And certification, if you will, of implementation of a program that Italy has committed to.
The two-day summit began under the shock of Greece's since-withdrawn plan to hold a referendum that could have catapulted it out of the 17-nation currency zone and ended with Italy being pressed to restore its credibility on financial markets. Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, his government hanging by a thread, said Italy would welcome quarterly IMF monitoring of long-delayed pension and labour market reforms and privatisation he's promised to implement now. The Greek Prime Minister faces a vote of confidence tonight with his own government deeply divided. If Mr. Papandreou can't persuade his rivals to approve the bailout plan, Greece is likely to have to leave the euro. After days of talking and discussions, the German Chancellor Angela Merkel says it's now actions that count.
If Greece does not accept the programme, then the same applies as we said yesterday. We do want Greece as part of the eurozone, but the euro and its stability has a bigger priority for us if Greece does not manage it for some reason.
Activists have said Syrian security forces killed at least 8 people and wounded dozens as they cracked down on protests after Friday prayers today, casting doubt on whether an Arab League plan can end months of bloodshed. The government offered an amnesty to anyone with weapons if they reported to police within a week. The gesture did not appear to be part of the Arab League plan accepted by Syria on Wednesday. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said he was disappointed at the violence in Syria.
People have been suffering too long. Too much, and more than 3,000 people have been killed. This is an unacceptable situation.
Egypt's foreign minister condemned Israel today for its decision to expand Jewish settlement building in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, a move that is likely to delay the revival of peace talks. Israel decided to accelerate Jewish settlement building on Tuesday, the day after UNESCO awarded the Palestinians full membership of the UN cultural agency. Pale-faced but smiling, the crew of a long-duration isolation study emerged bleary-eyed to a flood of daylight and applause today after 520 days locked away in windowless, cramped cells to simulate the length of a journey to Mars. The $15 million Mars 500 experiment aims to answer one of the big unknowns of deep space travel. Could people stay healthy and sane during more than 6 months rocketing to the red planet? This volunteer said it had been a valuable experience.
After 520 days of a motionless trip, we are proud today to prove that humans can go to Mars.
Finally, the official posters of the London 2012 Olympic and Paralympic Games were revealed today by some of the artists who created them. 12 British artists were commissioned to design special posters for the Games, something that's been done for the past 100 years. The most famous name chosen is Tracy Emin, whose catchy image of two birds with the scrawled words, "You inspire me with your determination and I love you," is a love letter to the world. Those are the top stories on Monocle 24.
Thank you, Nick. And now a look at the weather around the world with Tomasz Szafranecker.
The weather, in association with Kiwoni Travel.
And the weather conditions across some parts of Western Europe not looking good as we head into the weekend. The Western Mediterranean will be getting a lot of rain, some places up to 100 millimetres, and this brings a threat of flooding. Areas likely to get the heavy rain include Spain, the south of France, Northern Italy, the Balearics, as well as Corsica and Sardinia, and the list goes on and on. Again, this is through the weekend. Needless to say, it'll be very mild, as it has been across most of the continent. Here's the city forecast for the weekend then, and Barcelona, a risk of heavy rain showers and thunderstorms on and off through the weekend, highs of around 15 degrees. In Genoa, heavy rain showers too, 15 Celsius. In Zurich, just a small chance of rain, around 20%. 10 degrees will be the high here. In London, showers on and off through the whole weekend, 15 degrees. And in Berlin, nice autumn sunshine here, feeling quite mild too in the sun, 14 degrees. But the mornings will be on the chilly side. Now, air travel and the jet stream. Well, the main problems and delays may occur when traveling to the Western Mediterranean over the next 24 hours. Big thunderstorms may pop up at any time, so potential for a bumpy approach. The jet stream, of course, is associated with all of this poor weather over the Med. Now let's head on to North America, and the rainy weather is affecting central parts of the eastern seaboard at the moment, so North Carolina and Virginia. Quite a bit of rain here. The weather should improve over the next 24 hours. And as we head into the weekend, beautiful, sunny autumn weather will develop across a vast area of North America. In fact, all the way from Quebec into Ontario, across the border into New England, right over the entire eastern half of the United States and down to Texas. Plenty of sunshine and pleasant temperatures here. However, for a change, California is not seeing the good weather. Frequent rain showers and much cooler weather. Just a few days ago in LA, we had temperatures in the mid-20s, more like 15 degrees this weekend. So here's that city forecast then for the weekend. Los Angeles, cool with rain showers on and off, 15, maybe 17 degrees. Las Vegas, could be a shower, 15 Celsius. And then Chicago, Toronto, New York City, Washington, Atlanta, all sunny, and temperatures above the average for the time of the year, up to around 15 degrees. Now, air travel, fantastic air travel weather across most of the weekend, across the central and eastern half of the states. Over the Rockies, however, a little bit on the stormy side. Now, let's take a look at the Asia-Pacific region now. Lots happening here, and the weather is not looking great this weekend for Japan. Maybe you're heading there. Plenty of rain to come from Kyushu in the south of Japan to Hokkaido in the north. So Osaka, Tokyo, Sapporo, all expecting rain, especially Tokyo. And also over the weekend, heavy, perhaps flooding rains are heading for Vietnam and southern China. That's it. I'm meteorologist Tomasz Szafranecker here on Monocle 24.
You are listening to Midori House on Monocle 24. The time now is just about 8 minutes past the hour. In a moment, a dispatch from Egypt.
Londonból, ez a Monocle 24.
Aus London, das ist Monocle 24.
De Londres, ez a Monocle 24.
De Londres, este es Monocle 24.
London kala, Monocle 24 des.
De Londres, esse é a Monocle 24.
Londonist, sino Monocle 24.
Από το Λονδίνο, αυτό είναι το Monocle 24.
Λοντόστα, τέμα όν, Monocle 24.
Λόντζαδα, μπουρασε, Monocle 24.
Λόντον καλά, Monocle 24.
Doom, feuds and treachery. A riderless horse. Could be Greece, could be lots of places. But for journalist Tim Sebastian, that place is Egypt. Tim has just returned to London from Cairo, and his time there will give him much to talk about as he launches the New Arab Debates, a project inspired by the Arab Spring. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Nancy.
You are just back from Cairo, and really, reading what you have to say about it, the news is very unsettling.
It is unsettling. I think a lot of people hope to be winners from the revolution by now. There's a shortage of winners. And a shortage of a sense that they actually had a revolution in some ways, because normally a revolution is where one lot comes in, sweeps away the other lot and takes power. Well, this lot didn't have a leader. All the kids and groups that we saw in Tahrir Square, these very, very brave people who stood up to one assault after another, they didn't have a leader. So that when Mubarak dropped the mantle of power, it was the army standing there to pick it up.
And now they find themselves in a kind of turmoil. They really don't know, as you said, whether there really has been a revolution or there is still one ongoing. They're confused.
They're confused because the army, in some ways, is acting the way the army always did when it was answerable to Mubarak. We're seeing thousands of trials, military trials of civilians. We're seeing allegations of torture in prisons. We're seeing allegations of forced virginity tests on women in prisons as well. This is very disturbing to a people who've lived through 40 years of emergency laws and they're still in place. And that was the chief demand of the revolutionaries, get rid of the emergency laws. Well, guess what? In September, they were just extended and widened.
Let's pick up right there on the torture allegations and these forced virginity tests in prison. Why? Who? What do we know about this?
We know what the human rights organizations have been telling us, and Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch have done extensive research on this. They've got a huge amount of anecdotal evidence that this has been going on, and the military has, in fact, in a sort of sideways way, acknowledged that the culture in the military has to change. You know, they may be giving the orders to change, maybe orders saying this is a new Egypt, but it's not getting down to the engine room at the moment. I think it's worse than that. I think this is part of the continuing culture, and I think they're saying to people, we don't like criticism, we don't like people stepping out of line, and we are the ones now laying the parameters for your political game. So you can play inside the playground that we give you, but you won't step outside that.
But you better give us a team.
But you better give us a team, yeah.
And is there any indication of one rising from the ashes of the revolution?
Well, they're going to have parliamentary elections later this month. They'll take a sort of total of something like 3 months to get started.
But in the piece you've just written in the International Herald Tribune, it sounds as if the people don't have the confidence to go to the polls to make the right choices.
Well, there is that. There are a bewildering array of choices. I mean, you're looking at something like 80 political parties. It's an extraordinary thing. You know, in Britain, we find it difficult enough to pick six names out of a list. But I mean, when you've got 80 facing you, you don't know who they are, you don't know what they stand for, they don't have a track record, things like that. It's going to be very, very difficult. That's one thing. The other question is, how much room for maneuver will these political parties have given by the army? What will the army allow them to do? To what extent is the army going to step back from organizing their everyday lives? The army is terrified that a powerful civilian administration will put them on trial, will investigate their business interests, will investigate these torture allegations and find them guilty in some cases. This is something that, this is a very privileged beast you're talking about, the Egyptian army. They don't want to lose those privileges.
This is an extremely disturbing situation. Knowing you, you talk about this too. People come to you and tell you their problems. You're a journalist. You're a sponge for that kind of thing. But there must be some signs, some optimistic notes here and there.
Well, I tell you what, the most optimistic thing is that there are so many political parties that people are talking about politics, that they're widening the space for political dialogue. They're even getting the very conservative Salafis involved. There's one group that meets in the Costa Coffee Bar down in downtown Cairo, and they put up a slogan, slightly tongue-in-cheek, saying, we're always the ones who are paying for your drinks. So it's amazing to see who is coming out of the woodwork at the moment, who is prepared to talk, because scenes like this wouldn't have been possible before the revolution.
And that's great. What do they have to say, the Salafists meeting in
it's
coffee
not
shop?
It's not so much what they have to say, although they are prepared to talk about politics. It's the fact that they're there to dialogue at all. And that is something new. And the more people who can be brought in from what the mainstream thinks of as the periphery, then the better it's going to be, and the more united the people are going to be, and the more united they're going to need to be to stand up to the army.
So when the people go along to vote, what are we going to see, do you think?
We're going to see chaos. We're going to see a lot of unknowns making a lot of outlandish promises. I doubt very much that you're going to see anything resembling the kind of revolutionary government that a lot of people thought they would get after 6 to 9 months. Remember, this revolution is 8 months old. We really haven't seen a leader emerge. We haven't seen a dominant political force emerge. I think it's going to be a rocky ride for some years to come.
And like all of these revolutions, this is the case. You don't have change overnight. It does take many years.
It does. And I think if people were a little more convinced that change was going to happen, that they won't get something resembling what they had before, Mubarak light. This is what they want to avoid this time. They had Mubarak heavy the last time around. They don't want Mubarak light. This was supposed to be about choices, this revolution. At the moment, it's down to one, the army. That's the only one they can see, and the only one that they can see that's capable of actually running the country. Because people will tell you, these kids in Tahrir Square, they didn't know what to do. They can't run anything. They've never run anything in their lives. So who have we got? If you don't like the army, who else is there?
Well, we have the king of debate moderators, Tim Sebastian, entering the scene. You can help. You're involved in the Doha debates, have been successfully for years, and you're about to introduce the new Arab debates. And you think, I understand, you can help improve the dialogue, bring young people into the picture.
Well, we're talking very small steps here, let's be honest. We're trying to involve as many young people as we can in political dialogue, and getting them used to asking the really vital questions that matter. And they're facing this avalanche of promises from everybody. Everybody's promising them the world. Each political party comes along with a new promise. They need to test these promises. They need to test the people who are making those promises and choose a government from an informed position, not sleepwalk into the next government. This is absolutely vital, that they have some information, they do their homework, and they ask the very, very difficult questions. And if we can contribute in a small way to that, then we'll have done something good.
Tell us a bit more about them. You have funding from Britain, the Swedes are in on it, you are involved, and you're going to be in Egypt and Tunisia.
Absolutely, because these are really where the fast-moving political events have been taking place. Tunisia, of course, the first country in the Arab region to have a revolution, an uprising. Egypt, of course, the cultural center of the Arab world, vitally important what happens in this country. And we hope to be there monitoring the events as they take place and giving people the chance to ask questions all along the way. And in the end, this project should become a Tunisian project, should become an Egyptian project. Once we've started it and run it for a little while, hopefully they will take it over and inculcate it into their culture and spread out to universities and schools. And that's what we're looking for.
Will you fly in once a month, every few months, or will you open up a shop there?
Well, once a month, and we're going to have local staff in each place to spread the word, hopefully.
Shopfront? People will be able to see them, get to them?
I'm not too good at shopfronts, but no, I mean, everything will be online. That'll be our shopfront. We'll have good websites. We'll have a lot of participation, hopefully, from young people, young professional organizations. We want to involve people in asking those vital questions and realizing that you have to play a part in your society. It's not like watching a football game from the stands. You've got to get down on the field. You've got to play yourself.
Excellent. And you will be the chair.
So far, until they kick me out. Yeah.
So journalist Tim Sebastian, chairman of the Doha debates and soon to be chairman of the new Arab debates. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Nancy.
Next up, a controversial waterside development in Istanbul.
For listeners in Tokyo or visitors to Japan, you can now enjoy a coffee, a Wilkinson dry ginger ale, or our classic curry at our first ever Monocle cafe and shop at the new Hankyu Men's Department Store, just steps from Ginza and the lobby of the peninsula. Featuring a Monocle shop, stocked with our ever-expanding collection of special collaborations, the Monocle Cafe is the perfect place to refuel after a run round the Imperial Palace or a busy day in Marunouchi. For more details, visit monocle.com.
Every Saturday, Monocle's editors team up with a lively mix of guests to take a leisurely look back at the week past and pull out their personal highlights, cultural, political, musical, cinematic, and more. Our Saturday show is the perfect accompaniment to the weekend papers and a good coffee. The Review comes to you in association with J.Crew every Saturday at 11 a.m. London time, right here on Monocle 24, and is also available on our timeshift player on monocle.com and on iTunes.
We have a new film up today on the Monocle website, and it takes you to Istanbul and inside the Galata Port development, a project which is trying to revitalize a section of the waterfront there. The only trouble is the fish and the ironmongers who've thrived there for decades are wondering how they're going to fit in with a swish new neighborhood. Monocle's video journalist Gabriel Lee walks the narrow alleys of the Karakoy neighborhood in his film in Istanbul, and he witnesses an area in transition. Let's have a listen to some of the sound he gathered there.
The Istanbul neighborhood of Karakoy, set along a stretch of the Bosphorus coast right at the entrance to the Golden Horn, is poised on the brink of big change. Surrounded by more prominent neighborhoods, Galata and its famous tower up the hill, the tourist magnet Old Town just across the water, it's the site of the Galata Port project, a proposed redevelopment plan that would open up the port area, now a closed-off customs zone, making the waterside accessible and installing shopping, hotels, and residences on prime real estate. The first stage has been completed with the construction of the Istanbul Modern Museum, but that still sits amidst warehouses and a fenced-off waterside, in a large car park placed over what used to be a communal square in centuries past. Developers say that opening up the coastline would re-energize the place, bringing people and investment to this, Istanbul's first port.
To be in neighborhoods is the first, I think, important thing for making that kind of transformation successful. The people are very important. The people are making the places for living.
Well, do take a look at the film if you can at monocle.com. There's some very lovely pictures taken by our Gabriel Lee. Now we're joined on the line from Istanbul by another Monocle person, film producer Elvan Kıvılsım. Hello, Elvan.
Hello.
Good evening to you.
Good evening to you as well.
This film, in fact, I understand, tells the story of a place that's very close to your heart. Your father had a shop there. Can you take us to it?
Yes, that's true. My father had a shop in Karaköy in the Thursday Market area for over 20 years. And I can say that I grew up in that area and I helped my father in the shop. And being a young girl growing up amongst all that men, going about their business, trade, it was very different, very interesting experience for me.
I guess.
So I know the area very well.
What was your father selling? What was his little business?
Well, actually, my father was selling shirts, menswear, to all the men who are working there. And, of course, he had a very good business for the fact that, most of the people who work there are men. And, he would visit his friends' shops, the other shop owners, and he would bring his own goods, or they would come and visit him. They would have tea. They would chat. And this is part of the life there, part of the culture of the Thursday market. The relations between shop owners, everybody knows each other. And it's, they make jokes and they always pay each other visits and they drink tea together. It's a very long tradition of a communal life. And the sad thing about the gentrification, what we call the gentrification process, is people are losing this now. This culture is, getting lost.
So it's sad to think about that, but you also get a sense in Gabriel's film that, some of the old-style workers themselves kind of know their time's up. I hate saying that because I don't feel it ought to be. And they've got these lovely, tiny little intimate shops and hardware things that they're selling. But you do get a sense that they think change needs to come, that tourism needs to come in. Do you get that sense too?
Yes, of course. I mean, this is, I think, the part of the change, the process of change, because every change brings a loss, but also a gain. You gain something and you lose something. And these people are very much aware of that. They are aware that the place cannot go on like that forever. Turkey is changing. Our way of doing business is changing. Now we have shopping malls and people are moving to these shopping malls and, nobody comes to do their business there anymore. And of course, they see these beautiful old structures, buildings that need to be saved. And they accept that. But of course, they are very sad because this is a very old culture that dates back from the Genoese time. And, when I say the Genoese, it's 13th century. So I think there is some sadness, you know. It is okay to be sad about this loss. And, you know, also it's okay to try to save this something, whatever we can save. And I think I share this feeling with all the men over there who work there. If there were a way to save part of this culture, I think it would be a much better process of change, let's say.
Well, I see the artists are moving in and doing things with the spaces that they're finding, as artists often do when a new neighborhood is, or when a neighborhood is transforming. Do you think there might be a way that the two can live side by side somehow?
Yes, actually in the beginning I did not, because when I first heard about some artists, actually the American women artists wanting to move there and start this artist space, I was quite skeptic, you know. Knowing the culture of the place, I thought, no way, you know, the men will treat you so bad because they're not used to having these foreign women doing art there. However, I visited them later on, and I saw their art space, and it's very vivid, and they seem to have quite good relations with the men who own the shop owners around this art space. And I saw that actually for the men, it's something new and interesting as well. And all the galleries and the architects' offices being opened up there, the museums, I think perhaps this is the better part of the change, because there's something about art that that seemed to at least, you know, take over something from this culture, the old culture that we are said to lose. And they go and they shop in these, they buy hardware from these men, from these shops, and they use that in their art. So I'm quite happy about that, and I think it can work.
That's wonderful. Excuse me. Sorry about my little throat tonight. That sounds wonderful. And what stage are they at? I mean, is this project, you know, sort of halfway, or what's the timeline here?
Do you mean the Galataport project?
Transformation of this, the transformation of this waterside area.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, it is still on hold at the moment because, well, there have been a lot of reaction from the civil society, from lots of NGOs and, you know, also groups, civil initiatives, who say that this culture needs to be saved, this area, you know, you can't just build a new complex, you know, sites there. And so the government had to stop this project, and nobody knows, actually. There are a lot of rumors, and we keep hearing from different sites, oh, Galataport, they're going to start it next month. Oh, no, they canceled it forever now. And all these rumors, it's hard to know what the truth is. But I think sooner or later, the project will start again. You know, they will finish it, and this water site will be transformed. But actually, nothing, there's no construction work going on at the moment, and we're just waiting.
Okay, well, Alvin Kibelsim, keep your eye on it for us and keep us posted. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, you're listening to Midori House on Monocle 24, live from London, and I have a song for you. It's called Hang With Me, and it's by Robin.
Will you tell me to my face, then I guess you can hang with me.
It's just about half past the hour here on Midori House on Monocle 24. Coming up, we're going to be hearing about the first ever World Festival of Interiors in Barcelona. And we're also going to find out who makes our Top of the Political Pops song contest. But first, some news headlines with Nick Kelly.
Thanks, Nancy. We begin from Cannes. The Eurozone won verbal support but no new money at the G20 summit in Cannes today for its tortured efforts to overcome a sovereign debt crisis, while Italy was effectively placed under IMF supervision. Greek parliamentarians prepared to give their verdict on Prime Minister George Papandreou today in a confidence vote which could decide the fate of both the nation's European bailout deal and the global economy. The group of 20 leaders adopted stronger language on currencies than they have on previous summits, agreeing to accelerate a move towards market-driven exchange rates and mentioning China for the first time in that context. Greek government sources say the Greek Prime Minister George Papandreou has struck a deal with ministers to step down and hand power to a negotiated coalition government if they help him win a confidence vote. A week of high drama in the Eurozone has left Europe's business leaders bewildered and fearful the unresolved crisis will tip the continent back into recession. The Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has defiantly refused to step down despite growing desertions from his crumbling centre-right coalition that have left the fate of his government hanging by a thread. Activists say Syrian security forces killed at least 8 people and wounded dozens as they cracked down on protests after Friday prayers. A senior military source says Iran is the biggest threat to the United States in the Middle East, surpassing Al-Qaeda, which is down but not out. And finally, the Israeli Navy boarded 2 boats today carrying pro-Palestinian activists towards the Gaza Strip in a fresh challenge to Israel's blockade of the Islamist-controlled territory. Those are the top stories here on Monocle 24.
Thanks very much, Nick. Well, you are listening to Midori House here on Monocle 24 with me, Nancy Durham. The first ever World Festival of Interiors, appropriately called Inside, has just taken place in Barcelona. Now, the festival is a celebration of interior design, as opposed to, say, product or industrial design. And the pinnacle of the 3-day event was the World Interior Awards. Monocle's design editor, Hugo MacDonald, has popped into the studio to keep me company and to join me in a chat with Ilse Crawford. Ilse is creative director of Studio Ilse and head of the Department of Man and Well-Being at the Design Academy Eindhoven. Wow. And Ilse was one of the judges at the festival. She's on the line now from her studio in East London, just back from Barcelona. And Hugo, let's just ask Ilse. Ilse, take us to Barcelona and tell us, what did we miss?
Well, it was a festival of interiors, as you rightly say, but what was interesting about it was linked to the World Architecture Festival, so they're both in the same building, which I think is what made it so interesting, because a lot of the time these days, it's actually quite hard to decide which is which. Architects do interiors, interior designers often do the architecture or work with an architect of their choice, so the lines are increasingly blurred.
Ilse, it's Hugo in the studio. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm very good.
Good, good. I just wanted to ask, I mean, the relationship between architects and interior designers can sometimes be a bit fractious. How did it play out in the festival, both architects on one side of the hall and interior designers at the other? Was it quite a happy relationship?
I think that relationship is exactly as you say, slightly mistrustful on both sides, but that's why I think something like this is such a good idea, because you know, you did start to see blur, particularly around the coffee bars. and particular talks would attract people from one side to the other. So anything that can get people into the same space and, you know, start to get people talking to each other can only be a good thing.
Oh, that's brilliant. And what were people talking about?
Well, I think, interestingly, the talk that seemed to bring people together the most was on offices. There were an awful lot of architects turning up to the interiors of offices. So you can see that there are certain key areas that people are really interested in right now and, you know, starting to realise there's an awful lot that they don't know enough about.
Of course. And, I mean, office design is something that we've spoken to you about in quite a lot of detail. It's a sort of sector that, like you say, people are talking about a lot more now. But
also, after all, ultimately, inside is where we live.
Exactly.
And a lot of the concepts for the inside of buildings, I actually don't really like that word interiors because it turns it into a list of furniture. A lot of the concept for the insides of buildings are ultimately the business heart of the building. You know, if you look at things like Citizen M or any number of other concepts, they're driven by the inside of the building, by the soul of the building. So no. I think the marriage of the two is essential.
No, you're quite right. And I mean, I want to go back to the festival itself and talk about, so what did it look like? Was it just a lot of booths with different interiors set up, or was it pictures?
It followed the World Architecture Festival format. So basically, it's based on people submitting projects for the award. So they're on, you know, boards.
Right, mood boards and things. Assembles.
And I think it's a bit of a pity, but at the same time, you know, you are looking at people applying from all over the world. So it's hard to see how to improve on that until everybody obviously could submit digitally,
and
which I think would be
a vast improvement.
Ilse, I wonder if I could ask, you were judging there, and I wondered if I could ask you what winning design caught your eye.
Well, I was chair of the super jury, so chair of the super, which is a pretty...
Did you wear a cape?
Sorry, did I wear a cape? God, I really wanted to, actually. And in a way, you have that slightly sort of impossible task, really, of deciding which of the winners of each specific category. So, you know, sports, retail, office, residential, etc., should be the overall winner. And actually, that's a pretty impossible thing to do. By the way, I'm sorry about all this noise. It's all of a sudden started to be...
I wondered if there was some sort of architecture and design going on that we should know
with
about.
With some angry architects from the other side of the hall coming back
no,
to chase you.
Great. Anyway.
What are they doing?
It's just amazing fireworks. It's beautiful.
Oh, good. Of course, it's bonfire night here in London tomorrow.
It's that time of year. Fantastic.
Yeah. But back to the winners. I mean, who was the overall winner then?
So in the end, what it came down to was we decided that what was interesting about insides was, if you like, context and effect, to put the inside into a bigger context. So the projects that we liked in the end came down to two. I know it's quite hard. The projects that we like came
down. I love it. I think you should narrate what you're seeing out your window.
Well, right now, there's a little red one going up.
Excellent.
There's some exploding tiny green ones.
But so you narrowed it down to two in the end.
I narrowed it down to two.
Yeah.
And they were basically all about how to preserve the past for the future in different ways. So how to do that without caricature, how to do that in a way that was relevant. Because, you know, that's a really hard one today.
Definitely.
So basically it was the project for the V&A, for the Ceramic Study Galleries by Opera, Amsterdam, which is that extraordinary solution that's about big glass cases that bring the entire collection to a wider audience, because their brief was basically to change a gallery that used to hold, I think, 3,000 pieces to hold 26,000 pieces.
Yes, gosh, that's
and make them entirely
feat.
Visible. So it's this incredible glass case that you can see everything from every angle. And it's amazing, really inspiring and really exciting.
And the second one?
And the second one was the Waterhouse in South Bund, Shanghai, by Narian Hu, which is a hotel, but it's much more than a hotel. It's a renovation of a lane house, which I think has the potential to really make people interested in urban revitalization. It's already obviously an issue there that people are quite concerned with. I think it shows the future economic value of the old when it is skillfully executed, as this one is. You know, it addresses the ethical dilemma, really, of how you build something like that in a location like that. And it's just very well done. You know, it's done with wit and courage. And it's a really great example of how to preserve the past for the future.
Thank you very much, Ilse, with a bang and a flourish. We're going to have to leave you there,
absolutely.
I'm afraid.
Absolutely.
Love this. They are the winners. So the final winner is Narian Hu.
Narian Hu.
Thank
Fantastic.
You.
We're highly commended.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Ilse Crawford, Creative Director of Studio Ilse and Head of the Department of Man and Well-Being at the Design Academy Eindhoven. And she is also a narrator of firecracker events, fireworks events.
It was quite a show going on in the background, wasn't
Indeed.
It?
You are listening to Radio with Fireworks. Coming up, we have a song. Do we have a song? Future Islands and Krish right now.
Every month, the Monocle shop unveils a new collection of collaborations available on monocle.com and in our shops in London, New York, Hong Kong, Beijing, Tokyo, and Osaka. This month sees a range of new bags added to our collection from Porter of Japan, a new blazer from London-based designer Oliver Spencer, as well as our regular lineup of stationery, CDs, posters, and books. Pop into our shops or visit us online at shop.monocle.com.
For a complete briefing on the business of design, join us for Section D, Every week, Monocle's design editor, Hugo MacDonald, brings you the world of design in a perfectly formed package, looking at architecture, industrial design, fashion, retail, and graphics. Monocle 24's Section D brings the world of design to you, the Monocle listener. That's Section D, premiering every Tuesday on Monocle 24 at 1900 London time here on Monocle 24, and also available on our timeshift player at monocle.com and on iTunes.
The Muslim pilgrimage of Hajj started this week, and as millions of people from around the world congregate in the Saudi city of Mecca, Monocle correspondent James Longman takes a look at the not-so-well-known elements of the tradition. Pimp My Hajj is James's take on the exclusive deluxe Hajj Plus tours that are on offer to the Holy City.
If you thought that making Hajj was about hordes of people traipsing their way across sunburnt plains on their way to a rather hot and inhospitable desert town, think again. The biggest pilgrimage in the world started a few days ago, and for some, it's an opportunity to get spiritual in style. The wealthiest pilgrims making their way to the holy city of Mecca will be pimping their Hajj on the doorstep of the holiest sites in Islam. Whilst others make do with regular packages which consist of two-star hotels, rushed visits of the major sites, and simple, formulaic itineraries, one operator insists on its website, for example, that sacrifice is not included. What a relief. The more exclusive packages, on the other hand, ensure every whim is taken care of. Raffles's new Meccan Palace Hotel, which adjoins the Grand Mosque, is one such destination. Describing itself as a discreet yet highly refined residential sanctuary for elite and discerning Muslim travellers, high-rolling hajis can expect an exclusive, personal 24-hour butler service, a chocolate room for handmade bespoke pralines, along with a spa and even a four-storey mall. Quite what you need a chocolate room for when you're going on religious pilgrimage is debatable, but touches like these certainly form part of the $2,000 a night Raffles Mecca experience. For a truly otherworldly stay, a night in one of the presidential suites would set you back $6,000. Even better, perhaps, is the Mecca Royal Clock Tower just metres from the Kaaba. Sitting in one of the tallest towers on Earth and visible from 10 miles away, this hotel boasts a lunar observation centre, giving guests an extra chance, perhaps, to communicate with their maker. An Islamic Heritage Museum is another added bonus, giving the elite Hajj traveller all he could possibly need to ponder the history of his faith. Humility and modesty aren't the first words that spring to mind when details of the super deluxe Hajj are explored, but those things are, after all, what the journey is supposed to be about. In its earliest incarnations, the holy trip was fraught with danger and disease, as pilgrims had to negotiate rough seas or looting bandits, and were thus reminded of their insignificance in the greater scheme of the universe. It is possible that one may be reminded of that as one gazes through a telescope from the Lunar Observation Centre, but it's unlikely that the thought would remain for long, given all the delights these five-star Meccan palaces have to offer. Indeed, one might feel as though death had already come, and that the jewel-encrusted beds and marble-laden baths were part of a heavenly reward. But no, these monster hotels are a very definite reality, and as more of them cover the increasingly crowded Meccan hills, it looks like this holy city could soon have more in common with its Gulf counterpart, Dubai. From holy Mecca to shopping Mecca. Not the greatest transformation, I think you'd agree.
James Longman there with his Hajj monologue. This is Midori House, coming from Monocle 24's Studio One in London with me, Nancy Durham. It's been the kind of newsy week where good stories can so easily be lost. My personal favorite involves that most astute of politicians, Silvio Berlusconi. He was just about to release an album called True Love, featuring himself on vocals accompanied by a guitarist friend. But what with the Euro crisis, Greece in such a bad way, and Italy not far behind, was this the right time for love? Mr. Berlusconi, with his own shaky government and a few criminal matters pending, has decided now is not the time for love songs. Plenty of journalists have reacted with appreciation, seeming to feel this is good news, giving our ears a Berlusconi break.
I can't say I agree. I think now is exactly the time for cheering up. So here at Monocle 24, we are bucking the trend with this, our own political Top of the Pops. Rather than wait for Silvio's new hits, we've uncovered an old track of him singing a French love song in Paris some time ago. Here he is at number 10. At number 9, we have the American president who spared us his voice and gave us his saxophone instead, Bill Clinton. Number 8, and we have Mikko Alatalo, the Finnish politician Finns keep in power, so he doesn't return to the stage. Here he is, singing about everyone needing someone to love them.
Ei mun takki kaipaa neulaa, ei lankaa, mutta sielu kaipaa seuraa parempaa. Ei näissä kapakoissa kuule runoa, ei tankaa, pelkkää juopunutta puheen sorinaa. Kun en nyt kaikki on, niin jäljelle jää vain tuo ihmisen ikävä toisen luo.
Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper is lucky number 7 with Imagine.
Imagine all the people sharing.
Former U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft flies in at number 6 with his self-penned chest beater, Let the Eagle Soar.
Let the eagle soar like she's never soared before. From rocky coast to golden shore, let the mighty eagle soar.
From the coldie with a golden oldie at number 5, it's Vladimir Putin with Blueberry Hill.
I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill. On Blueberry Hill. When I found you, the moon stood still.
And piling on plenty of extra cheese sees a new entry from the U.S. presidential hopeful Herman Cain at number 4 singing Imagine There's No Pizza.
Imagine there's no pizza. I couldn't if I tried. Eating all the tacos. Oh, Kentucky Fried.
Number 3 is Mikhail Gorbachev with a traditional Russian lament, a love song to his late wife, Rosa.
Разорвав любви живую нить, и зачем листкам под слоем пыли счастье наше отдали хранить, храня так много дорогого. Чуть пожелтевшие листы, как будто все вернулось снова, как будто вновь со мною ты.
At number 2, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez with a certain U.S. Secretary of State on his mind.
Soy mal querido por Hillary Clinton. Yo tampoco la quiero. La ra 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 ra. La, ra, 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 ra.
And finally, at number 1, it's Kim Jong-il and a few of his friends.
Don't
I can report that everybody here is standing up instead of marching around, cheered on by that North Korean ditty. What a range of music we found. We did fail to find anything of President Sarkozy of France. We thought that just would have put the icing on the cake. But of course, he's close to someone who does sing. And we do have a song by Carla Bruni, his wife, and it is called Raphael.
Quatre consonnes et trois voyelles, c'est le prénom de Raphaël. Je le murmure à son oreille, ça le fait rire comme un soleil.
Well, I was going to say, barring any surprises, that was just about it. But we do have a special mystery guest who is just going to walk into the studio any second now. I hear the door creaking, the footsteps, the man himself is coming towards me this Friday evening in London. How nice to see you, Tyler Brunet.
Nice to see you. Let me get my headphones on.
Get them on. But it's good to see you. You're all bundled up. You've got a lovely scarf around your neck. Lovely herringbone.
How are you, Nancy?
I'm very well. I'm really happy to see you.
I'm nice to see you.
Yeah. Where have you been? You've been...
I was in the mother country. I just got back from Toronto.
Oh, Canada. Did you hear Stephen Harper just now?
I did.
We've got much more of that if you want to return to him at
any
point.
Listen, I can put it on my program this evening then.
Yep. You're welcome to it.
Thank you.
Absolutely. We've got more bits. You can run that longer.
Good.
What? So...
I was in Toronto for about 24 hours, and not even 22 hours, and now I'm back.
Did you see anything new?
I didn't really see that much new, to be honest.
Or notice any...
Toronto's not great at this time of year, because the leaves have mostly blown off the trees, and it's in that very sort of grey state.
Yes, but no snow yet, but you
know
that's coming.
No snow yet, and it was kind of just cold, and anyway.
So just a quick in and out.
Yep, just a quick in and out.
And now you're here for a quick in and out.
I'm here for a quick in and out. But I'm here in the building for another, what do we have? Another 5 hours ahead of us.
Excellent. And why don't you tell us what you're going to do in the future this evening?
In the future
this
evening.
Or in the morning, wherever you are in the world.
Exactly. Tonight, I'll be in your seat. Hugo McDonald likes to sit here, so me and Hugo are hosting this evening.
Lovely.
And we're going to be looking at a variety of things. We've got the Guatemala elections. We're going to be talking about buying property in Cuba. Place that Canadians like to go, so all of our Canadian listeners can join in. We're going to be talking about personal shopping in the form of Kim Jong-il, his little shopping spree that he's been involved with.
Did he buy something you could tell us about quickly?
Dolphins. You've got a couple.
Where does he keep them?
We're going to find out.
Okay.
We're going to find
okay.
out tonight. And also be talking Tokyo Design Week with one of our correspondents as well. That's all tonight on the Monocle Daily.
That's fantastic. And for now, that's all from us here at the Midori House program. Today's show was produced by Gillian DeBias. Our studio manager was Anna Veal. I'd like to thank our researchers today, Alex Solom and Tom Hall, especially for their help with our Top of the Pops. Nick Kelly will be along with the headlines in a moment. At the top of the hour, we know we're going to have Tyler Brulé here with the menu, Monocle Daily at 10 o'clock London time. And that's it from me, Nancy Durham. It's been so nice being with you the last 2 days. Have a good weekend.
Essa é a Monocle 24.
Monocle 24.
Dette Monocle 24.
Das ist Monocle 24.
Dette Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.
This is Monocle 24.